I'll take it in, but don't look down.
'Cause I'm on top of the world, hey. I'm on top of the world, hey. Waiting on this for a while now. Paying my dues to the dirt. I've been waiting this time.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to JJ's Football Fix, your home of everything EPL. My name is Jordan Giffkins, and alongside me is the one and only Jake White. How are you, mate?
I am great. How are you, Jordan?
I am great. Thanks for asking, Jake. Always good to be here on a Friday evening, chucking in our thoughts on the Premier League. That is obviously every week, except for this week, because we have international breaks. So, different sort of podcast that we won't be previewing this week's or next week's fixtures. We'll be doing that next week, so that's always something to look forward to. But we will be doing our normal review of the week's fixtures. We'll have our eye over. We are going to have a look at the team of the season. Before I say anything else, that is the big thing on today's show. We're going to be casting our eye over every player this season and just chucking in our best 11. Jake's probably going to be a little bit better than I am at this one. I'll be honest, I haven't even looked at anyone.
Not even me?
Haven't even looked at you, so maybe later, maybe tonight in bed. without further ado, Jake, let's talk about last week's fixtures. And we kick things off with the, I'm not sure if it's a shock of the round, but it's certainly a shock to everyone involved in the football world over in England. AFC Bournemouth 1, Sunderland 2. Interesting game here. Dan Gosling opened the scoring for Bournemouth in the 11th minute before our old mate Victor Anichebe scored the equaliser in the 33rd minute. Stephen Pienaar got himself sent off with a second yellow in the 59th minute, but that did not deter Sunderland when Jermaine Defoe scored from the penalty spot in the 74th minute after bringing down our mate Victor Anichebe and gave Sunderland their first win of the Premier League season.
That's just a former Everton recap there. Dan Gosling got a goal, and Anichebe got a goal, and P and I got a red card. They used to all play for Everton. This is weird, but because this is the game that I chose to watch at 2 o'clock, and Bournemouth absolutely dominated the whole game. Like, there wasn't one time in the game where I thought Sunderland slightly deserved to be leading or anywhere near leading. So Bournemouth absolutely dominated, but. Like I say, a lot of weeks, it's a matter of taking chances, and Sunderland did that in the end, and I said at the start of last podcast, I said it's looking like Sunderland may not win a game all season, and they come out and win their next game.
I think you actually said that they're going to win the next game as well. You're like, watch them win next week.
So, yeah, but fair play. Like, I don't hate Sunderland. I think they're the lesser of two evils out of them and Newcastle, but they're still going to get relegated, in my opinion, but it's a big win for them, but I don't know how Bournemouth didn't win this game.
Well, if you look at statistics, Jake, I know your app's going to tell you something different to my app.
It is, probably. My app's outrageous looking at it right now.
We'll go with your stats, Jake. What are yours?
70% possession for Bournemouth, 22 shots to 9.
Oh.
What's yours?
I had 20 shots to 4. With 70% possession.
Yeah,
so.
Your apps make it Bournemouth look better than what they are. not even just looking at the stats, if you look at the highlights, like, you look at the highlights on Optus, the Optus app, there's like about 10 shots that they show throughout the whole game, including the goals, and the only shots they showed for Sunderland were their two goals. And the rest was all Bournemouth. So I think that tells you the story of the game, really. But to be fair, Sunderland got 3 points, and they're at that stage right now, which that's all that matters for them. And they got it, so can't take that away from them.
The win lifts Sunderland up into 20th position, so it's good to see. Good to see them making waves in the Premier League. On to the next game here. Burnley 3, Crystal Palace 2. Sam Vokes opened the scoring in the second minute for Burnley before Johan Berg Gudmundsson. I don't even know.
You need to do your German accent for that.
Johan Berg Gudmundsson. I don't even know. No, that's Russian. That's not even German. Gave Burnley a 2-0 lead in the 14th minute. Connor Wickham for Crystal Palace did bring one back for Crystal Palace, like I said, in the 60th minute, before Christian Benteke in the 81st minute scored a penalty, and then Ashley Barnes, the Aussie.
Big Bargie.
Not Aussie. scored in the 94th minute. I'll be honest, I didn't even see any of this game. So I'm going to assume Tom Heaton was probably best on ground again.
Maybe. He didn't really do a lot. Like, he made a few saves, but like, I didn't watch the game, obviously. I just told you I watched Bournemouth with Sunderland, but I've obviously watched the highlights over a lot of games. And Palace were a bit harsh not to win, but Burnley, I wouldn't say it was similar to Everton versus Burnley when Burnley won in the last minute, but Burnley, I don't think, realistically had any right to win the game. But they've done the exact same thing. They scored on like the 93rd, 94th minute. I don't really know what to say too much on this game, but I think Palace will think that that's 2 points at least dropped.
Yeah.
3 points, sorry, dropped.
Palace. For all that, they've had a lot of praise this season, but they sit in 16th position, one spot above the relegation zone. So, I personally thought that they were having
a good season. They've got Manchester City at home in the next game as well.
So it's just going to get even better for them. But moving on to a Manchester City game, and they squandered a golden opportunity to extend their lead at the top of the table with a 1-1 draw at home to Middlesbrough. So Sergio Aguero, the 43rd minute, did give them the lead. But it was in the 90th minute that Martin de Roon scored to give Middlesbrough a point at the Etihad Stadium. And it was a fantastic ball, to be honest. I'm not sure who it was. I think it was Friend. Was it that put it in? George Friend. Unbelievable ball. Out of absolutely nothing. Just pick up the ball.
At the end. I don't know where Daroon came from, too. I was watching the end of the game. I changed it over to this game late in the game as well. And it was weird because they were showing the highlight of the goal. And, there was a City player down, so, they were showing, the highlights of the goal, repeatedly. And the Roon came out of absolutely nowhere. When they got the ball, and they had an attack, and then they ended up getting it out to the left in the end, the Roon was nowhere to be seen, basically, the whole time. He literally came out of nowhere in the end. He was there for a little bit, but at the same time, he literally came out of nowhere. And I don't know how it happened, but they're not going to complain, obviously, but City absolutely dominated the whole game, and they've dropped points again. And it's a case, could be a case again of Champions League, because they did play Barcelona a few days earlier. But they've done it again. I don't know too much. I think it's their third draw at home in the league, or something like that in a row. They drew against Middlesbrough. And they drew against Southampton, and they drew against Everton, their last three home games. So,
they're dropping points. They're certainly not the team they were at the start of the season.
All three of them, realistically, they should have won. It's much as I'm happy that Everton got a point against them. They should be winning all three of those. And now, they're not top of the league. I know the league table doesn't really matter all that much, realistically, if you're only 2 points off top now. But still, that it could come back to bite them at the end of the season when they're dropping points to teams they should be beating at home.
Like I said, they're not really the team they were at the start of the season. They are, but they're not. They're still putting in really dominant performances, but they're not getting the wins that they should be. On to the next game here. West Ham 1, Stoke City 1. Glenn Whelan scored for West Ham, an own goal. So, good on him. And before Bojan, gave Stoke City the equaliser in the 75th minute. This game was a little bit odd. I did look at the highlights. I certainly thought Stoke City deserved the win based off the highlights. But alas, it was a 1-1 draw, Jake.
Off highlights, like you said as well, Stoke probably did deserve the win. And I don't know what's going on with West Ham this year, because they're a shell of the team they were last year, like I've said a lot of times. But Stoke have started to hit their straps. They got off to a really slow start, and I was getting really stuck into players like Boyan, Arnautovic, Shaboni, Shaqiri. But now they're starting to hit their straps. I think that's six unbeaten now in a row in all competitions that they've had. So that's obviously they're starting to get up there, but I think they could potentially, like, a point away from home in the league is obviously not too bad, but I think they will be thinking that this is a few points dropped as well.
Yeah, as you said, Stoke have definitely found that little bit extra form recently. They were very, very abysmal at the start of the season, and they've moved up to 12th on the table at the moment, which is probably around where they should be, possibly slightly lower than where they should be come the end of the season. And yeah, based on that front, three or four of Boney and Bojan and Arnautovic and those type of players, even Peter Crouch. yeah, and Shaqiri, I missed him. That sort of caliber of team really should be, you know, pushing, you know, ninth or eighth on the table. So we'll see what happens at the end of the season. They've definitely turned it around. So I guess it's just up to them to consistently keep doing what they're doing. And for Joe Allen to keep firing. Moving on to the game that we don't really want to go into. Chelsea 5, Everton 0. Hazard opened the scoring in the 19th minute. Diego Costa giving him the ball because he got the assist. Marcus Alonso in the 20th minute gave him a 2-0 lead before Costa, just before halftime, gave them a 3-0 buffer. After halftime, Hazard in the 56th minute did score, and then Pedro in the 65th completed the route to give Chelsea a 5-0 victory. Everything statistically points to a Chelsea win. It's been widely seen as one of the best Premier League games from Chelsea that a lot of experts can remember. Personally, I thought it wasn't even a case of Everton being bad. It was just Chelsea were way too good. And I think a lot of the Everton supporters and Chelsea supporters probably agree that it was just a matter of Chelsea just being absolutely dominant on the day.
Yeah. I wasn't obviously happy with this game, but obviously I have to talk about it. Yeah, I agree with you. It was one of the best games that I've seen Chelsea play in a long time. It's reminded me a lot of their game against Arsenal a few years ago when they won 6-0, I think it was. But there's just a clinic, realistically. I don't really know what to say on it. I don't really want to go into too much detail because I'll end up sitting here talking for about 20 minutes about how shit we were. but you can't do much. Hazard and Costa are starting to really show their class, and we were the team that ended up getting pumped.
I want to point out something, Jake, that probably, I mean, or only the Everton supporters will know. Tom Davies came on in the 66th minute, just after we scored they'd scored their fifth goal. He was arguably our best player.
Yeah, he was. He was our best player the whole night. He was the only shining light the whole night. And it's depressing as an Everton fan to think that a little Scouse kid coming off the bench or you're 5-0 down is a highlight of your night. But it was, realistically, he put a lot of Chelsea players in his pockets, which was nice to see. But, yeah, there's not much you can do. Like I said, I don't really want to sit on this game too much. But, yeah, Tom Davies was fantastic. And it's good to see that we've still got that academy and how good our academy is, because we've still got players like Kieran Dow, Mason Holgate, Tyus Browning coming through. We've got Brandon Galloway, who's out on loan at West Brom. So we've got a lot of players who are coming through the system who are phenomenal and will all be first-team players in the Premier League at some stage in their career. So that's good. And I'm not going to dwell on this game too much because I still think we are a top 17 this year, but it's just a shame. The way they played, they would have demolished anyone in the Premier League that game. So I'm not going to sit on it too much and think that we were that horrible, because if they were playing against Liverpool or City or United, they would have smashed them too. So fair play to them. But it was obviously very disappointing as an Everton fan.
And let's hope they do play like that against those type of teams. Imagine if they go out to Liverpool and beat them 6-0. That'd be absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, I would not be complaining in that.
On to the North London derby, Arsenal versus Tottenham Hotspur, of course. Kevin Vimmer gave Arsenal a 1-0 advantage at the break from an own goal after Ozil put it into the box. And Wimmer decided to put it into his own net, his choice. before Harry Kane, a penalty in the 51st minute put Tottenham at 1-1, and it stayed that for the rest of the game. Weird game. I watched it in bits and pieces. I can't recall either keeper having to do anything sensational or really being tested that much. I think Peter Cech made a couple of good saves, as did Hugo Lloris, but it wasn't a case of, and like, I mean, I said with Tottenham, like, they're not a very high scoring team, like for or against.
Yeah.
So I wasn't expecting a lot of goals. I just thought it being a derby that it would be a lot more fiery and a lot more open than a normal, say, Tottenham game. And Arsenal being so good attacking this season, I thought they might offer a little bit more. But 1-1 was the final result. Jake, what was your take on it?
It was a good game. Like, both teams are good teams, and they're both obviously going to be contesting for Champions League and maybe even potentially the league this year. But yeah, it wasn't exactly, it just didn't look like a derby. Like, but the away fans weren't really getting up for it. The home fans were sitting down the whole game, just enjoying the comfort of their own seats. This could potentially turn into a rant, and this could hopefully be my only rant of the podcast. But it was honestly embarrassing, because if you're an Arsenal fan and a Tottenham fan, you don't want to see your players, like, if I just say I'll put myself in a Tottenham fan's shoes for a second, I don't want to see any of my players walking after the game, walking up to Arsenal players and smiling with them, joking with them, laughing with them, and shaking hands and all that stuff. Like, shaking hands, fair play, respect, and all that stuff. But you've just drawn a derby. You don't want to draw a derby, you want to win a derby, and your players are happy. That doesn't show any passion at all, and that could be the person that's been in the North Terrace for 12 years coming out of me, that if I saw a victory player doing that, I would get stuck into him and all that stuff. But I just hate that. It's a derby. You're meant to despise the people that are on the opposition. And it just didn't look like a derby. There was no people trying to two-foot one another. There was no one dragging people down off the ball. There was no scuffles, realistic. Like, there was one little scuffle late in the first half. But other than that, there was no scuffles. There was no one trying to create any fire or anything like that. The only controversial moment was potentially the penalty, although it was a blatant penalty. It just did not seem like a derby at all. It was a good game of football. Like, if that was a game like, say, Palace against like West Brom or something like that, that's a fantastic game of football. Both teams were attacking, both teams didn't want to draw, and it was good, but it just didn't look like a derby at all. Like, people look at these games, like Arsenal, Tottenham, Manchester derby, Merseyside derby, anyway, realistically any derby in the world, if you look at a derby and you watch it, you want to see people getting stuck in, people sliding in, people fighting, people showing passion for their badge, and it just wasn't there, and it really pissed me off.
It's as though approached the game as just another game. They didn't They didn't look at it and be like, you know, they don't want to get up and about it being a derby. They don't want to be fiery. They don't want to try show that their team is better. They don't want to try show their supporters that they care. Like, they they went about it like it was, I guess, a tough like opposition, as they would, but they didn't, like you said, they didn't, no scuffles, no hard challenges, nothing really.
Like last year in the Merseyside derby, like, we lost 4-0 and it was absolutely embarrassing. We got absolutely demolished by Liverpool. But when Funes Mori two-footed Origi, and as bad as it is, you don't want to see players get injured, etc., and Origi was out for like 5 months, that was fucking fantastic. I loved it. Like, as bad as it is, I don't want to see players get injured. I don't wish injuries upon anyone. But it showed passion, and like, it was pretty stupid in the end when he walked off and he was like looking at the away bay and he like grabbed the badge and all that stuff. But, and I'm not sitting here talking up Everton, but our players showed passion in the derby. We have Ross Barkley, who's Scouse. how many Tottenham players were in the Tottenham team that was born that were born in Tottenham? How many Arsenal players that how many Arsenal players were born in North London or in London for that matter?
Mm.
And I'm not saying Everton's full of Scouse players. Like we've what got like 2-3 Scouse players, literally, like in our squad consistently every week. But like it, I look at derbies and I want to see tackles flying in and passion throughout the whole game, and there was absolutely none throughout this whole game. The only passion shown was when Harry Kane scored from 12 yards out. Yep. And he ran to the away bay and started hugging people in the away bay, and you could see the away bay going absolutely mental. Other than that, that's the only highlight of that game. Like, it was a good game of football, but it's meant to be a derby.
The gentleman's derby, maybe.
See, the thing is, there's Manchester United versus Arsenal next week at Old Trafford, and that's honestly, I reckon that's going to look like more of a derby than that, what Tottenham versus Arsenal was.
Yeah, probably.
Because Arsenal and United absolutely hate each other, and Wayne Rooney's probably going to come out and try and two-foot someone.
Hopefully.
I hope so. No, move on.
Yeah, so next game, Hull City 2, Southampton 1. What?
Look at the stats.
Oh my god.
It's honestly ridiculous.
Charlie Austin scored from the spot early on in this game, in the 6th minute, before Robert Snodgrass and Michael Dawson, within 2 minutes of each other, scored for Hull City to give them a 2-1 advantage, and that's how it ended. I mean, Hull City at home, I mean, you wouldn't rule them out, you wouldn't rule anyone out at home against another team, but Hull City?
They're just, they're not good, are they?
No, and they sit in the relegation zone, but they have won against a team that is one of the most informed teams in the league at the moment in Southampton.
I don't know. If this was Everton, honestly, I would rather get belted 5-0 by Chelsea and get absolutely trounced by Chelsea than lose 2-1 to Hull City.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Especially when you look at the stats and Southampton, and when I was looking at the highlights too, Southampton didn't play bad. It's just it's Hull City had a 3-minute burst of 2 goals and
that was it. They packed up shop for the rest of the game.
That was that. I'd be fuming if I was a Southampton fan with this, because this is a massive. That was a massive chance for them. They win that, they move up to 16 points above Watford into 8th position. That would be, I'm pretty sure, 4 wins out of the last like 6 games or something, and they'd be on fire. But now they've gone and lost the Hull, and now they find themselves in a pretty shit situation, because now they play Liverpool next. So.
Yeah, so now it's just like a good opportunity. Like Everton, you know, they have a good opportunity to make something happen, and they blow it.
Basically, yeah. Oh, well, that's their own fault, realistically. Like I've said, every single podcast, you take your chances, you win football matches, and that's what Hull did.
Charlie Austin, though, he's certainly relishing his time this season.
Why is he not in the England squad above Jamie Vardy?
Because Jamie Vardy is in the team based on reputation.
Exactly. That's ridiculous. That's what's going to cost England not doing anything in a World Cup. I'm not saying Charlie Austin's not going to make the World Cup squad now because he's not in a squad to play against Scotland, but he's scored, I think, 7 goals in all competitions this season, I think, or 8. 7 or 8, I think it was. And Vardy scored, like, 1.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Vardy do anything. We've just finished week 11, and I haven't heard Vardy, the word Vardy all season. Like, literally no one has talked about him. Last season, everyone was talking about Kante, Vardy and Mahrez. And I haven't heard anything about Vardy. I've heard a little bit about Mahrez, and I've heard a bit about Kante, but I haven't heard anything about Vardy this year. And Charlie Austin's consistently scoring. Sure, Southampton aren't winning every game, and they aren't coming out, and he's not scoring, like, goal, but he's scoring nearly every week. He's not coming out and scoring hat-tricks every week, but he's scoring every week. So I don't know why he's not in the England squad.
Yeah. And yeah, like I said, reputation's like massive. I guess you see it around the world as well. When even in club squads and stuff like that, players out of form still getting played based on, you know, their history.
For, you Wayne can take, Rooney a few yeah, weeks ago.
I was just going to say, Wayne Rooney is probably the most obvious example of that. Albeit it looks like he's turned a corner at the moment, so that's good for him.
Come for Everton.
Moving on to the next game here, Liverpool 6, Watford 1. Liverpool are something else at the moment, aren't they? They are on another level, alongside Chelsea, two of probably the most attacking and best-looking teams in the league right now, and probably easily the front-runners alongside Man City for the league. But Sadio Mane, of all players, scored a header in the 27th minute. Coutinho made it 2-0 in the 30th. Emre Can, or Khan, or Can. In the 43rd minute, gave him a 3-0 advantage into the break. Firmino scored in the 57th. Mane again in the 60th before Jan Mat did give Watford a bit of reprieve in the 75th minute before Wijnaldum, I was about to say. Wijnaldum gave Liverpool the 6-1 win. He scored his first goal for Liverpool after signing from Newcastle in the summer. Jake, this is getting ridiculous. We talk about Liverpool every week, and we hate doing it, but you can't ignore their form. They are absolutely dominating at the moment.
You can't really ignore them. Especially being an Everton fan, it's very difficult to ignore what they're doing. But I just keep on saying every week, they keep improving every week too. It's not like they're staying complacent with playing decent football and just going on from that. They're improving every single week, and that's a scary thing. I don't know if they're in a better position squad-wise than what they were a few years ago when they had a crack at the league, but they're looking fantastic, and Klopp's got them playing some sort of football that obviously teams can't really control at the moment, but their attack is just... Like, if you look at the names in their attack, they don't have a fantastic attack. Like, they have a good attack. They have Coutinho, Firmino, Mane, Sturridge. Like, that's a really good front four. But you wouldn't really think that's a front four that'd be winning the Premier League, like, realistically. But can't really take much away from them, really. They're playing fantastic football. I nearly called it. I said I did take a Snapchat and put it on my story before this game saying not exactly keen on watching Liverpool win 6-0, and they won 6-1. Wonder how much 6-0 was paying on Bet365, Jordan?
About 41.
Thanks, mate.
Probably. About that.
No, but they're playing some fantastic football, and I'm not going to... sit here. I don't really want to sit here and talk them up too much because they will get a bit of a run later on in the podcast too, but they're playing good football and they deserve to be up top of the table.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned their squad. You reckon it's... you don't know if it's in a better position than it was, but you have a look. They've got their front three, Coutinho, Firmino and Mane, who were genuine A-graders of the Premier League. And then the ability to bring players like Wijnaldum, Sturridge and Origi off the bench just shows how much attacking options they've got. Sadio Mane, you'd argue, would probably be the signing of the summer at this stage.
Be up there. I don't think signing of the summer.
In the Premier League, not in the world.
He'd be up there. I don't think he would be the signing of the summer, but I think he would be well and truly up there, like probably in the top three, top five.
Yeah, he's scored 6 goals this season, so he's certainly playing well for Liverpool and warranting his price tag at the moment. On to the second last game of the game week in the Premier League, we have Swansea City 1, Manchester United 3. Zlatan Ibrahimovic back in form, but it wasn't before Paul Pogba opened the scoring with an absolute peach of a goal in the 15th minute. Ibrahimovic did get on the score sheet in the 21st and 33rd minutes. One of the goals, I can't remember which one, probably should have been saved by the goalkeeper, but wasn't. Mike van der Hoorn, I think that's his name, did give Swansea a consolation goal in the 69th minute, but it was not enough as they succumbed to a 3-1 loss at home to a much better Manchester United team. But it wasn't that Manchester United dominated the shooting or anything like that. They were just... you could just tell they were a better team, and I think Manchester United maybe not have quite turned a corner in this game because Swansea have been deplorable this season, but they are back on winning terms.
Yeah, well, they didn't play too well, in fairness. They didn't at all, but that goal from Pogba is a decent goal. If he could do that consistently. He's not worth that money. No one's worth that money. Ronaldo's not even worth that money. But fuck, it's a really good goal. But they played well. But honestly, they played better in the game against Burnley than they drew nil all than what they did in this game against Swansea, where they've won 3-1. But they've got the 3 points, and that was the most important thing for United in this game, to get the 3 points. Because if they didn't get the win in that game, then they would really be struggling. Like, I'd almost put a line through them of top four, because if they didn't win that, then they would already be 9 points off top four. So it's a big win for them. They really needed it. And, yeah, they didn't play great, but they got it. So, fair play.
What was I going to say? I was going to say something, Jake, but I've completely forgotten. So I'll just forget it. Oh, yeah, there it is. Corners. 2-0. Swansea had more corners than Man United, who didn't even have one corner.
Yeah, well,
that's all I wanted to say.
Well, they had 19 corners in their nil-all draw against Burnley.
Yeah, well, Tom Heaton, though. Moving on to the last game of the week, and it is Leicester City 1, West Bromwich Albion 2. Just another shock in this quite interesting week of fixtures, to be honest. I'm pretty sure we said Leicester were going to win this game last week, and James Morrison gave West Brom the lead in the 52nd minute before Slimani scored 3 minutes later to make it 1-1. But Matty Phillips scored for West Brom in the 72nd minute to give them the victory, and a very important 3 points for West Brom, who now move up away from the relegation zone and into 11th. So they have jumped a fair few teams with this victory. I'm not sure regarding who probably deserved the win, because I didn't watch the game, but statistically speaking, it looks like West Brom might have actually deserved it.
Yeah, well, they did, to be honest. Leicester finding themselves in a very bad situation. I don't think they're going to get relegated, but they're only sitting 2 points from the relegation zone right now, and they're focusing so much on the Champions League that they're starting to fall into that pack, really. Like, imagine, I don't think they will, obviously, but imagine if they win the league 1 year and they get out of their group in the Champions League and then get relegated.
Win the Champions League and get relegated.
I think then you make a movie about Leicester City. Don't make a movie about them winning the league. Make a movie about them winning the league then getting relegated the next season. Now, that's a drama. They won't get relegated, but West Brom did deserve the win, and can't take that away from them, really. They're playing well this year, West Brom. They didn't play too well when Everton came up against them, and I was getting a bit worried about it. I thought maybe they may finishing the bottom three this year, but they signed Chadley, and Chadley didn't play this game, I don't think, but he's had a good impact on West Brom, and they're playing some decent football, and I don't think they're going to be in that bottom three either this year.
Is Brendan Gallagher
playing for him? Honestly, I can't see the bottom three changing.
What's the bottom three at the moment?
Hull, Swansea and Sunderland.
Yeah, that's. I probably would have picked those three pre-season to go down as well. So, interesting times for those three teams. As we move on to the table, Jake, I will progress onto this. Unfortunately, we do have Liverpool sitting in first position. Chelsea on 25 points, 1 point below Liverpool in second. Manchester City, 1 further point down in third, with Arsenal in fourth. Tottenham in fifth, the only undefeated team in the league right now. 6 of their 11 games have been draws, though. So that's why they're down there. Manchester United on 18 points alongside Everton to make up the 6th and 7th position. Watford is still enjoying quite a good season despite their 6th one shellacking to Liverpool. They sit in 8th position. Burnley in 9th. Southampton in 10th. West Brom, as we said, moved up to 11th position. Stoke City also enjoying some good form in 12th position at the moment. Bournemouth and Leicester in 13th and 14th. Middlesbrough, Crystal Palace and West Ham make up 15th, 16th and 17th. And as you said just before, in the relegation zone, Hull City, Swansea and Sunderland, even though they won their first game of the season, still sit dead last. Jake.
Jordan.
The top goal scorers in the league at the moment, Diego Costa, has 9 goals. Aguero has 8. And Hazard has 7 alongside Lukaku on 7 as well. Hazard turned his season around, or turned his year around, because his first half of the year, back in the back half of last season, and most of the start of the season as well, he was pretty deplorable for Chelsea. But he is up there this season, which is fantastic to see. Except on the weekend, it wasn't fantastic to see. Kevin De Bruyne has the most assists in the league with 6. And then we have a few on fire. We have Lallana, Matic still up there, Pedro and Coutinho all have 5 assists. Jake, we have not got JJ's football jokes this week.
No, we're gonna week off.
Have a week off and figure out some jokes for next week, because we have figured out that our jokes are getting worse and worse as the weeks go by, and we need an entire week.
He wasn't too impressive last week.
They were pretty bad last week. Actually, last week was probably better than the week before, but...
Oh, the week before. Jesus Christ. Right, let's not think about jokes this week.
We also don't have the Bet365 Bet of the Week. We will have that next week as we preview.
The scout report? The scout report.
Yeah, we've got the scout report next week. Jake, how did your players go, though, in the scout report from last week?
The scout report from last week. Where is the scout report from last week, Jordan?
I believe that was in the podcast last week.
My hot player last week was Sanchez. I'm pretty sure he did nothing in the North London Derby.
I will lie.
My cold player was quiet, and then he got an assist. And my bargain was Heaton, and he copped 2 goals. So, yeah.
So a pretty stagnant week of Fantasy Premier League scout report. Yeah,
I'm starting to follow your trend of your Bet of the Week, to be honest.
My Bet of the Week this week was, I think it was Bournemouth to beat Sunderland. I think it was both teams to score, or it was over 2.5 and a win for Bournemouth. And ultimately, my bet did give Sunderland their first win of the season. So,
just make your bet against Everton every week and we'll win the week.
It's funny because I'm pretty sure you mentioned how my bet 365 Bet of the Week every week has literally gone against me. And the one week I'm like, oh, you know, I bet against Sunderland because I haven't won a game. They win a game. So, moving on, though, we have a bit of discussion point today. We are going to cast our eye over the team of the season so far. We are roughly a third of the way through the season, just under. And I think it's a good time to just have a gaze at all the players from this season so far and see how they're performing. And if the season was to end today, we would see who would be in the team of the season. Jake, I'm going to let you take the reins on this one because I still don't know who's in my team of the season. So I'll let you go first, mate.
Am I just going goalkeeper and you go goalkeeper? Or?
Yeah, but explain your reasoning, I think.
My goalkeeper's Tom Heaton, just because I think he's the best keeper in the Premier League at the moment. I don't think, like, in the way of most talented keeper in the Premier League, because I think, like, De Gea, Courtois, Lloris, those sort of players, Joel Robles, class above him, but he's been the best keeper this season by an absolute mile. That's just realistically, that's my reasoning. He's basically kept Burnley out of the relegation zone.
Look, I'm going to agree with you here and say that Tom Heaton has been the keeper of the season so far. I think it's pretty self-explanatory, and you did explain it just then as well. So,
did I?
Yeah, that also does help. It does. I think I'm pretty sure it was before the Manchester United game. I mean, I talked him up prior to that game, saying he's been one of the most informed keepers in the league. And that week, you know, against Manchester United, had arguably the performance of the season out of any single player. I'm Tom Heaton, keeper. What a guy.
My fullbacks, Hector Bellerin and James Milner.
James Milner. Interesting one.
I got Ballard right back just because I think he's a class above everyone. Not just because I don't think, like, I think he is the best right back in the league, but he's also sticking up to that tag as well. He's been fantastic for Arsenal, and he's one of those players that every team needs. And James Milner has been, again, class for Liverpool. He's playing in a position where I would have never thought I'd see James Milner play, and I don't think that he's really put a foot wrong since moving to left back, they haven't lost a game with him in left back. They've just looked fantastic. And like, it's not just Milner, obviously, but he's really shored up that left side of their defence. And like I said, I would never thought that he would ever play at left back, but he's been pretty good for them there. And like, I know most of his goals have been from the spot, but at the same time, he's doing a shift defensively, so fair play to him. So they're my fullbacks, Jordan.
I'm actually going to agree with you on both players, I think. Not because I'm not sure, but I genuinely think that... Or I'm going to agree with you on one player, which is actually James Milner. I think he's been pretty bloody good since he's moved to left back. And as you said, like, you never really picture him as a fullback, but he's made the transition really, really well. So good on him. Good on him for that. My right back is actually going to be Kyle Walker.
Yeah, it's fair.
I mean, pretty self-explanatory. He plays a very similar way to Bellerin in that he's quite quick. But he's been pretty bloody good for Tottenham this year, and not only is it evident in the way that he's played, but also in the goals they've conceded. Is, you know, only six goals conceded in the league so far this season, haven't lost a game, so he's been a very imperative part of their defence, Jake.
Yeah, look, can't really disagree with that. I was tossing up between Walker, Bellerin and Klein. They're easily the three best right backs in the league by an absolute mile, so yeah, can't really disagree with you there. My centre-backs for the team of the season so far are Laurent Koscielny and Jan Vertonghen. I think they're two of the best centre-backs in the league. Definitely not the best centre-backs in the league, but two of. Yeah, they're just class. They're both doing their job. They're both, I think, I'm probably wrong on this, but I think they're both captains of their clubs. And they're both putting in shifts every single week. I can't really remember the last time that either of them, other than Koscielny's penalty, giving away penalty against Spurs last week, I can't really think of too many times they've both let their team down or their goalkeepers down.
I think Lloris is the captain of Tottenham, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, Vertonghen was the captain at one stage. Maybe he's a vice-captain. Yeah.
Maybe when Lloris was out with injury at the start of the season.
I don't know. But I know that Vertonghen has been captain at least once in his time there.
I'm going to agree with you again on one of those players, which is Koscielny. He is, in my opinion, the best centre-back of this season in the league. But my partner for him is actually going to be the Tottenham teammate of Vertonghen, Alderweireld. I think he's also had a very strong season. And I remember when Everton were linked with him a couple of years ago before he went to Tottenham, and pretty sure we were buzzing to get him, and then he went to Tottenham, and look at him now. So, what a signing that would have been. But yeah, like you said, Koscielny's been, you know, apart from the penalty on the weekend, he's been probably the best centre back in the league. And Alderweireld, again, part of that back four of Tottenham's that's only conceded six goals in the season, and he's alongside Vertonghen has played a massive part in that happening. So my other options would have been Mertesacker and Smalling, but I'm not going to go for them. That's a joke.
When I first did this, I had Gary Cahill there, but I changed Vertonghen. I put Vertonghen in for Cahill because I think Cahill's been pretty decent for Chelsea this year too.
And getting selected in the England squad, which is always on the form. So
I've gone with a 4-3-3 for this team, so I've gone with two central midfielders. One of them is Nemanja Matic. I think he's back to his form of a few years ago when he was probably the most dominant defensive midfielder, not only in the Premier League, but probably in Europe. He was fantastic in the title-winning season for Chelsea a few years ago, and a bit of a surprise, and it could be a little bit biased, but I'm going with Idrissa Gueye as the central midfielder next to Nemanja Matic. Gueye's made the most tackles in the Premier League, and I think is one of the most underrated signings of the season. And a lot of Villa fans, when we signed him, said that we'll love him, and he's definitely a fan favourite at Everton. So they are my two central midfielders for the team.
A little bit controversial. Only a little bit. I mean, it's only a little bit because realistically, like, his play has warranted that, and he's especially his early season form. But I am going to take. I have a different formation to you. I have a 4-3-3, but with only one holding midfielder. So, I'm only going to stay. Maybe two. I don't know. one of them is...
While Jordan tries to get his team of the season up during the podcast.
I am going to agree that I have an Nemanja Matic in there. He is a absolute beast of a central defensive midfielder. It feels like he's playing a little bit slightly more forward this season. That's probably because he has 5 assists, which is ridiculous for a defensive mid. But he has been very big in Chelsea's success so far. Alongside him, I'm going to put down Joe Allen as put some spice in there.
You're calling mine controversial, then you just lob in Joe Allen, who's playing for a team who was in the relegation zone for most of the season.
Well, you have a look at his recent form, especially. He has been...
How can you call mine controversial about the player that's got the most tackles in the league, and then you put Joe Allen?
Realistically...
I'm not saying he's had a bad season. He's been great this season.
Realistically...
But he's been good, but...
You called it controversial initially, so I just followed suit. it's better than putting in Pogba or something, so... We'll go with that, Jake. That's my two holding midfielders, even though Allen's playing more as an attacking midfielder. Yep.
Yep. Right. I'm not going to disagree. I think he's been good this year, but my attacking midfielder in front of Idrissa Gueye and Nemanja Matic is Felipe Coutinho. I think he's probably in the top 3 best players in the league this year so far. Despite me calling him an overrated fraud at the start of the season, I think he's definitely proved me wrong with that. Although, in previous seasons, he has been way too much hyped up by people who have no idea about football when he scores a worldie from about 40 yards out and then does nothing for another month or two. But this season he's been absolutely class, and I think that proves with how well Liverpool are going. I think he's the mastermind behind it all, realistically. Every single time they go on attack, he's the one that they would look for. And yeah, he's just been class, and I think he's definitely up there in the top 3 players this season so far. So he is my attacking midfielder.
For me, it's almost sort of a weird one, this position for me, because I'm not sure. I would have Coutinho there just based on knowing like how he's played, where he's played and stuff like that. He often gets named on the left wing, though.
Yeah.
So if we were to, say, turn around and put him at attacking midfield, even though he's played left wing every game, does that warrant selection?
Yeah, but I've got 2 really good wingers on the wings.
I know as well. And I'm looking at it thinking, like, I don't know, I'm going to fit them all in. I'm actually going to go left field here and not pick Coutinho for the attacking mid. I'm going to pick Kevin De Bruyne as my attacking midfielder. He leads the league in assists. He's scored plenty of goals. Like, what more do you want from a player playing in that role, really?
Not much. You remember when we were linked with De Bruyne as well after he played well with Wolfsburg in assists, and then he decided to play even better throughout the whole season.
We
and
do
just
seem
like
to get linked with a lot of good players.
Look, I wouldn't mind De Bruyne and Alderweireld in the Everton team right now.
But,
I wouldn't complain.
He's in my attacking midfield team of the season so far, and pretty self-explanatory why. Jake, who are your wingers?
I think the wingers are probably self-explanatory as well. Got left winger Eden Hazard and right winger Alexis Sanchez. They're just both on another level this year. They were both probably quite easily the 2 best players 2 seasons ago, and now they've just found their form again. Sanchez did play well last season too, but Eden Hazard this year, I think, is the best player in the league again. And yeah, that's why I've named Coutinho at attacking midfield, because realistically, these two on the wings, you wouldn't really be complaining. They're by far, well, not by far, but they are the best wingers in the league, and they're proving that this year too, Jordan.
Yeah, see, this is why I was, like, tossing up with all this, because Alexis Sanchez for me has been playing striker. So I don't know if that's I could name him on a right wing.
Well, realistically, Sanchez has been either playing striker or left wing, and I've named him on the right wing. So.
You're doing what EA Sports does, and naming like four centre-backs in their team of the season. but I am going to say on the left wing I have Coutinho, and on the right wing I have Hazard. Now, has Hazard been playing on the left or the right?
Yes, he has, you fuck.
It's a controversial one because
you're calling my team controversial so much over Drissa Garnegay and you put Joe Allen in, and now you're saying, oh, Coutinho's been playing on the left wing, and Hazard's been playing on the left wing, and you name him on the right wing.
Yes, yeah. Well, I should have just played a 3-4-3 formation on mine or something like that. I feel like that would have been more profitable.
No, you just had to be controversial, didn't you?
I know. I had a bit of controversy in this one. Pretty self-explanatory. You explain Coutinho, why you put him in your team. That's the exact reason why he's in my team. He is probably one of the best players in the league this season. And Hazard is the player he was 2 years ago, even better, possibly. So, yeah, that's my wingers. Jake, who's your striker?
My striker is Diego Costa. I think, like, it's not just because he's on top of the Golden Boot. I think he's finding his feet from two seasons ago as well. He's just, like, I've said the exact same thing realistically for all the Chelsea players, like Nemanja Matic, Hazard, and now Costa. They're all in the team this season 2 years ago for a reason, and now they're playing the exact same as what they did 2 years ago. But yeah, I think he's just been class. He's one of those strikers that one team in the Premier League absolutely loves him, but 19 teams in the Premier League absolutely hate him because no one Steven wants to come Miller. Up against him. You don't want to come up against him. Realistically, he's honestly on another level. And like, you give him the ball, like, I know you could say the same for a lot of strikers like Aguero, Lukaku, but if you give him the ball in a decent position, he will score. And he's proved that. Like, I know Aguero's been pretty good this year too, but I think Costa had a lot more to prove this year than what Aguero did. Aguero was class throughout the whole of last season. Costa had a very average season last season. And he's had a lot to prove because there was rumours that he was going to be leaving, and there's rumours that Chelsea didn't want him anymore, and now he's come out and he's top of the Golden Boot for a reason. And that's why he is my striker, Jordan.
Controversial.
You're going to go Alexis Sanchez, yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I don't know how to split Sanchez from Costa. And the only thing I can split them on is
because
goals.
Because you put Joe Allen in your team as an attacking midfielder. If you put Coutinho in that spot, and then you put Hazard on the left, Sanchez on the right, and then Costa in the middle.
Then where do I put De Bruyne?
Where he is. You swap Coutinho, you basically swap Costa out of your team for Joe Allen. And then you put Coutinho back into the midfield.
Yeah, but I wanted to try base it off more positions where they've been playing.
But you're not, because you've got Hazard on the right.
Yeah, but that's like the only change. The only change I've got is that one.
What is your reasoning behind Sanchez at striker, Jordan, as I go urinate?
In my opinion, Sanchez has been... Actually, I'm not even choosing Sanchez for the team of the season, Jake. I'm actually going to choose Diego Costa for the simple fact that he has scored he has scored the most goals in the league. He has scored 9, in case you're wondering on the number.
Yep.
He is probably more suited to the striker position than Alexis Sanchez is, being Sanchez obviously being a winger more often than not. We're not being controversial in this one.
We're not, aren't we? Yeah, never. Why would we ever be controversial, Jordan?
Well, Jack, I could have gone left field here and chosen Firmino to be my striker.
Can you imagine? Yeah, but he looks like a fucking pineapple.
He does, doesn't he? He looks like a pineapple that has brown skin. But Diego Costa is my pick. He scored 9, he's assisted 3, in just the 11 matches, which is what you want to see from a striker. And he would, I would, if they were to name a third team of the season today, EA just came out, or someone came out and just did that, I would say Diego Costa 100%. So that's my reasoning.
Yep, thank you, mate. Yeah, look, I'm not going to disagree with you. Like, your team was good apart from Joe Allen, so...
Gotta give the underdog something.
You don't know, do you?
Not always. So now, what we will do, Jake, we're going to pick one team and one player from each category. We're going to pick one team who's flopped and one player that's flopped. And then we're going to pick one player who has overachieved or done more than you expected, and one player, team. Team. I think I can't remember what I said the first time.
But what I've got down here is one team that's like been good and is a surprise, one team that's a flop, and one player that's a flop, and one player that's been good and a surprise. Is that what you're trying to say, Jordan?
That's literally what I'm saying. Yeah. Let's start with the teams, Jake. Which team has been the flop for you?
West Ham. I had West Ham to be pretty good this year. New stadium, a lot of expectations, dropping out of Europa League, so they didn't have any European competition to worry about. And, well, they've proven why they did drop out of the Europa League, because they are bang average, and I did not expect it. I thought they were going to be good this year. I thought they'd be contesting with Everton for a top seven or so spot, and, like, they still could, obviously, but they are in a relegation scrap at the moment, and they are looking very, very average. Jordan.
Yeah, I agree. West Ham's definitely the team this season that's flopped for me. I mean, you could also argue that Leicester would be the team that's flopped after winning the league, but they weren't expected to go back-to-back or anything. They honestly expected just to sit around maybe 10th position or something like that, which is realistically what they're sort of doing. They're a bit lower, but West Ham, new stadium, new players that, you know, AU has been injured, but he's still class. Fagouli's been injured, but he's class. So they got a bit unlucky with a couple of injuries, Andy Carroll as well, but at the same time, they're sitting down in 17th position, and a team like West Ham, with the players they have, with arguably one of the best players in the league in pay in their team, it's a little bit underwhelming, Jake, for West Ham. Who is your team that has overachieved?
Well, I said earlier in the podcast that they'll get another run in later in the podcast, and here they are, Liverpool. Thought they were going to be good this year. There's no doubt about that. They don't have any European football to worry about. But, yeah, they've just been phenomenal, really. Like, apart from the Burnley game, they've never really looked like losing. They came out week one and dispatched the Arsenal, and then haven't really looked back apart from the Burnley game since then. They're still in the Capital One Cup 2 quarterfinals, I think it is now, too. So they're still doing well in the domestic competitions. And like I said, during talking about their game against Watford, they just look fantastic. And there's, I don't like Liverpool, obviously, but you need to give credit where credit's due. And they are a genuine, genuine threat of the title this year. And if there's going to be a World War III, I hope it's soon, so that we don't have to see Liverpool win the league.
I'm going to agree with you on Liverpool.
That's a shock. You're agreeing with me,
anyway. top of the league. No one would have expected them to be top of the league, and they are. So, for that, they are the most overachieving team. They have had a few iffy games. Burnley, you mentioned, obviously, they lost that game. This is their sole loss. But they've had a few games where they've got, you know, a little bit of luck went their way. But, you know, good teams create their own luck, and they've done so with that. I remember against Swansea, I think it was, they just escaped a loss, and they scored a penalty pretty late. So, But you look at them now, like the top of the table, and the next fixtures, they've got Southampton away, which is going to be tough, but then they have Sunderland at home, Bournemouth away, West Ham at home, and Middlesbrough away. So realistically, like, if they can beat Southampton away, they're pretty much guaranteed to get another four wins on the board after that. And then they've got the derby, which they'll probably win anyway. So so they're in a very, very good position. And they've beaten some strong teams. So they've definitely shown that they're title contenders and they can match it with the best. And it's unfortunate to see, but that's football, and if they're good enough, then they're good enough, and that's going to happen. Jake, who has been the player who has flopped?
My player, this is a little bit controversial maybe, but my player that's flopped this year so far is David Silva. Looking at his stats and looking at what he's done this year, he hasn't been a standout. Maybe that could be because players like De Bruyne, Sterling, even Iheanacho and Aguero are stepping up, but he's just not really offering much. From City games I've watched, he's usually just that player that's been sitting in the middle of the pitch doing basically nothing. But it's nothing against him as a footballer. He's an absolute class footballer, and I think he's in the top 10 players in the league, and that's why I think he's flopped, because he's not doing anything, really. In his 11 games so far, he's got 2 assists and no goals, which still isn't that bad. Like, 2 assists, that's not too bad. But at the same time, for a player of David Silva's class, you realistically expect a lot more. So it may be a bit harsh, but at this stage, he is my player that has flopped, Jordan.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. I think he's been pretty underwhelming for the most part of the season. But like you said, you got a lot of players coming through at City who are performing very well. You've got, you know, De Bruyne's around him, Sterling, Aguero. Like, it's just quality players everywhere. And, like, he might not be able to get the recognition this season just because of these type of players. It's almost stealing the limelight a little bit. But mine is, I didn't know between 2 players. And they both play for Leicester, Jake. So,
Mahrez and Vardy.
Yeah, Mahrez and Vardy. Because it's Premier League based, I'd almost say that Mahrez has been the most underwhelming. Because Mahrez has played well in the Champions League. He scored 3 in 4 in the Champions League and got an assist. So there's nothing wrong with his Champions League form. In the Premier League, he scored 1 goal, which was a penalty on the opening day of the season. And he's had 1 assist. And he's played every single game. Whereas Vardy, on the other hand, has at least, you know, scored 2 and assisted 2 in every game he's played. So he's done a little bit. He's had 4 contributions to goals. And since the opening day, Mahrez has had 1 assist for a player that was people were banging on last season. And fair enough, like, he had a fantastic season, easily the best player in the league last season. But banging on about him going to, like, Barcelona and stuff like that. Like, he's obviously got the talent, but for a player of his ability, he should be doing way better than he is. And albeit Leicester City are having, like, a pretty average season this season. They were never going to, like I said, never going to do what they did last season, but they're having an average season, and he is definitely not benefiting from anything. I mean, he wouldn't benefit from them having a bad season, obviously, but, he's just been very underwhelming, to say the least. And he's missed a few penalties as well, so... You know, it's a bit average. A bit average for Mahrez. He's probably been the flop of the season for me so far, Jake. But who has been the shining light, as you might say, player of the season, or most improved player of the season so far, or something like that?
Most improved player of the season so far is Eden Hazard. If you're going off last season, like right now, Eden Hazard, I think, is the player of the season right now. And it's not like he's the biggest surprise, realistically, because I'm not surprised that he's playing well, because he's always been class. But if you're going off most improved and who is the best player this year, I can't look past Eden Hazard. He's just been class every single time I've watched Chelsea. He's finally, like, last year when I was watching Chelsea, when they had the ball and they were trying to go forward, they usually either went through Willian or just basically went right up the gaff and just tried to score. But now they've got a vocal point of their attack, which, again, finally, which they should have had last season, is Eden Hazard. They go through Eden Hazard basically every single attack that they have, and now they're getting the rewards. They're sitting second in the table. They're absolutely belting teams every single week. They beat United a few weeks ago 4-0. They beat us 5-0 last week. They're class again, and Eden Hazard is the vocal point of that. Without Eden Hazard, they're not doing a lot of what they would be doing right now. I know they've got Pedro, Willian, Costa, Matic, who are all performing pretty well, but without Hazard, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing right now. So I think he is the most improved player this season after a horrible season last season. Jordan.
I'm not going to disagree with you, but I am going to say someone different. Just so we don't have the same person twice in a row. I am going to point out Victor Moses as someone who has...
Player of the season.
Not quite player of the season, but someone who's almost just turned a corner in his career. He was obviously very good when he made his transfer to Chelsea, and before he made his transfer to Chelsea, he was got a transfer there for a reason. And he's definitely taken his time to sort of show on why they bought him. But this season, like, we kept mentioning him in earlier podcasts this season, that he's coming off the bench and performing well, and he's had a few starts in a team that's playing very, very well at the moment. So, I mean, it's not like statistically he's dominating or he's breaking games open single-handedly like Hazard or something like that, but it's just the player that everyone knows him to be, he's not player anymore.
That's what we said. That's what I said a few weeks ago as well with Moses, is that he's just been fantastic. Like, he's literally just doing his job and he needs to do that. Like, last year he was at West Ham. A few years ago he was at Liverpool. He's been spending a lot of years out on loan and now look at him. He's not, obviously, he's not fantastic. Like, he's not exactly the best player in the league, obviously, and all that stuff. And he's not even starting for Chelsea, but he's doing a job. And I agree with you on all that, because he's been good, and I wouldn't mind him at a team of Everton, because he's a player that can come off the bench for the last 20 minutes and turn a game on his head as well.
Yeah, exactly. The Nigerian prince, Victor Moses. So, I just found out he was Nigerian, so I thought I'd add that in.
I was actually going to ask if he actually is Nigerian, or if that was just another JJ's football racial slur.
Alongside the Fijian monkey, Joy Krishna.
Let's steer so far away from that as possible.
We are anti-racism, everyone, so don't even think about it.
We are anti-racism.
We are sponsored by the anti-racism companies.
Are we?
I don't even know. Which one? I can't name one. Maybe McDonald Charity House.
I think we need to stop this conversation as soon as possible.
So that's all we got time for today, Jake. It's not even a short episode. It's probably arguably longer than most of the episodes, but we decided to talk about this topics today, and it's led
this
on.
This topics. Your English is fucking terrific today.
For a guy that majorly hosts the podcast, I think it's something I need to work on. I probably could go back to school, but I decided not to. JJ's Football Fix for another week is done. We will be back on Tuesday with the A-League Hour, the third episode of that, which is exciting. That's been very, very good, the A-League Hour. If you didn't,
very successful.
If you haven't got on that, that's swimming very nicely. So
Is it swimming?
I have no idea what that meaning is.
Does it float?
It doesn't sink, so that's always good. I guess it floats, but doesn't sink. Jake, if you're not following us on Facebook, which I know you are, but if you're not, then get on that. At JJ's Football Fix, we upload most...
fucking admin. Of course.
We try generate discussion most days. Doesn't always go to plan, but we do try. You can't fault us with our endeavour. If you ever want to ask the lads a question, you know, just get involved. You know, ask us a question.
Yeah, the boys.
We're waiting for one question. That is
just ask us a fucking question.
if we get one question, we know it's just going to keep flowing, and we're going to get heaps of questions. But until that does happen, we are questionless for now. Keep your eyes peeled on the A-League Hour on Tuesday. It's likely, I'm not going to say 100%, depends on people, but it is likely we're going to have a special guest. A former A-League player is going to come chat to us. All will be revealed on Tuesday in the podcast.
Former A-League player, he's going to love that.
And potential future A-League player as well. hopefully. As I said, if you're not following us on Audio Boom or Facebook, you know, get involved, stay up to date. We upload twice a week to Audio Boom, Tuesday and Friday. The Premier League on a Friday, the A-League on a Tuesday. Bit of a plug here for Chris Smoove. How are you, mate? Go follow him on YouTube.
Got him leaning.
I don't even know. I can't do his accent.
We'll get our sponsors back next week. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Bet365.
Yeah, plug, plug, plug. It's just a cheeky plug at the end of the episode. But until then, Jake, I hope you've had a good day. And
I've had a fantastic day. Thank you for asking, Jordan. How was your day? Let's continue this conversation later.
Until next week, everyone. We'll see you later.
Take it in, but don't look down. I'm on top of the world. Hey.